Hello, Bradshaw Boys listeners. This is Kevin James Doyle, a Bradshaw boy here, and I wanted to tell you about something that is very exciting. I just came out with my very first debut comedy special, and it is available around the world. It's called The 30-Year-Old Virgin, and it is about how I grew up in a religious home. I was saving sex for marriage. I got engaged. I called off my engagement a month before, and I woke up in New York City, a 30-year-old virgin, and I talk all about that in the aftermath, and I just got a 4-star review that said it's a hilarious show, but also a love letter to pre-COVID-19 New York City, which is something I wasn't expecting when I recorded it. But if you love New York City, if you love weird and awkward sex stories, which you listen to this podcast, so we know that you do, please go ahead and check it out. It was actually directed by Corey Cavan, fellow Bradshaw boy. And in the audience that night was John Sieber, fellow Bradshaw boy. And so it was definitely a family affair. And it is available on Amazon Prime Video, on Apple TV, on Google Play, on other platforms around the world. I know we have listeners in the US and UK, and that's on Amazon Prime and Apple TV, but also in Australia, you can get it in New Zealand, in Sweden. I know we have listeners in, I don't know if we have any in the Cayman Islands, in Cameroon. I'm reading the list of places it's available in Ghana, in Gibraltar, in Cambodia. So please go ahead and check it out. I'm so, so, so proud of it. And I think that it'd be an amazing way for you to support me and my career outside the podcast. But I wouldn't ask you to do it if I didn't think that you would not find it hilarious and enjoyable. And it would be a great evening of entertainment. So please go ahead and watch that if you so choose. The 30-Year-Old Virgin, I'm Kevin James Doyle. And on the Instagram or anywhere, go ahead and give it a review if you enjoy it. And tell your friends, and hopefully one day I'll write another show and I can come to your town and you'll see me perform live. But until then, I can be right there in your living room. Thank you so much. You all are the absolute best and it means a lot. And I hope you check out my debut comedy special, The 30-Year-Old Virgin. Thank you. Enjoy the episode. Bye.
You're now listening to The Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three relatively grown men binge the iconic HBO series Sex and the City. So dust off those DVDs and grab yourself a white wine or even a Cosmopolitan and settle in. Take it away, boys.
Welcome to the Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three guys watch their way through Sex and the City for the first time ever, mostly. I'm Corey Cavan.
I'm Kevin James Doyle.
My name is John Sieber. And today we have a colorful one. For those of you that don't watch our YouTube uploads, I highly recommend getting your eyes on our guest's outfit. And I can verify that our guest wore this outfit all day long. This is not an outfit specifically for the show.
It is a triangle tight bike shirt. It looks great. And we have on a guest that many of you may not know. And by many, I mean most. But guess what?
We had
him on a Patreon episode. He's our good friend, Harlan J. Alford.
Hi, everybody.
And he is a trained danseur.
Yes.
You don't say ballerino, you say danseur. Danseur. Is that correct, Harlan?
I believe that's correct. It's a male danseur.
And I thought it was I was just gonna say I thought it was danseur, like dance S-I-R, because you're a guy.
Danseur.
Dancer.
Hi, my name's Danseur. And
buy my product.
And so we wanted to dig into, we're going to watch an episode with him, but also I guess maybe you can enlighten us, Harlan, into who Baryshnikov is, because we are like, we know that he's a dancer and we know he's a legend, but yeah. when you, I mean,
we should
you
set
were, like,
the tone.
Palpably excited.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's
Harlan,
set the tone.
Harlan
what's going
is probably all three of one of all three of our best friends. Harlan, I own, it's
very true.
I own a business with Harlan
for a very long time.
Harlan, just set the set the stage here. Harlan and I had a couple cocktails some 10 years ago together, and I made a promise about 8-9 drinks in that if I ever got married, Harlan would dance in my wedding, in the ceremony. And in return, I would sing God Bless the Broken Road by the hit band Rascal Flatts in his wedding. And 4 years ago when Katie and I got married, you better believe, up front, full tuxedo, Harlan performed a dance. What was the dance called?
Oh my God.
It was to the song,
This
I don't
Is
know
My
much.
Love. This Is My Love.
This Is My
what
Love.
What I named it. It was yes. what the piece was called. But it was to the song.
I don't know who much.
I don't know who much.
But I know how
I love you.
You.
I love you.
Here's to all the people out there who, well, what do I want to say? John still hasn't sang that song yet.
But I will. So, I will.
So if anyone's available and they want to marry me to hear John sing Rascal Flatts acapella.
Yeah,
let's make that happen.
So Harlan is a good friend of the pod. If you've ever been to one of our live shows, you've seen him in the front row. Not really a person you can miss.
I've been to so many of your recordings. I'm the guy in the back working.
Yeah, because we'll record in an office and he'll be there like getting work done. So he's been like if we're a motorcycle, he's like in the little car next to it. He's in the little cart to the side.
Yeah, he's on the side.
And Harlan,
what's
something
the cart
else
to the side of it called
sidecar,
again?
Just a sidecar.
There's a car, and it's on the side.
It's on the side.
Another great thing about Harlan is he is a dancer, a trained dancer, professional dancer. But you've
many
once been,
years ago. Let's get that part right.
You've
that
been was, affectionately described as a gentleman with the name of an old country singer and a body like a tank engine full of mashed potatoes.
Yes, I have. That has happened.
Affectionately.
Thank you for bringing that up.
and that was...
I'm proud of,
you like
of that tank engine, and I am proud of this shirt.
Well, oh, yeah. The shirt looks fantastic.
I think... Harlan is one of the people that is responsible for Corey and I meeting, and Harlan was my first roommate in New York. So... There's mm-hmm. just too many connections here.
Yeah.
Knowing your relationship to the show in New York City and to we had to wait to have you on for a Baryshnikov episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I have to tell you, guess who got me into Sex and the City tour life? I actually did two Sex and the City tours because Kevin got me the gig.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Had you seen the show? Really? Had you seen the show?
Yeah. I had never seen the show before.
Wow.
He said, "Listen, I've never seen the show. You can do this. You can go lead this tour. Just here's a little script thing." And I went and did it. Knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, of course you did.
That's crazy.
But then someone never did it again.
that is I still can't believe that happened. That's like someone saying, "Hey, you don't know how to play chess. I bet you could teach chess." Which doesn't That's a crazy world.
So, Harlan, tell us what is your relationship to the show? How many episodes have you seen? Do you know who Petrovsky is? Who do you relate to as one of the Sex and the City ladies?
Yeah, I have only seen the first episode. I've seen more than that, but before you guys started this journey, I'd only seen the first episode. You know, I never watched it, even when I did the tour guiding thing, just those two times. I was like, nope, not going to watch it. I do understand it's like, you know, how huge it is, how it relates to New York. And I love TV like this, so I'm just surprised I never got into it. And then I was going to do it with you guys, as in like, I was going to listen to the podcast and watch the shows, but I didn't really do that. So I've only seen the episodes that I've been around when you guys played the episodes.
Which, what was the dance element? You were in the room when we recorded with Kirkman.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and what was the dance element of that? There was some dance connection there, wasn't there?
Was there? There was something.
What episode was that that we did with
Jeff? I really liked that episode.
Yeah.
It was a season the thing five is,
you
episode.
Asked about Petrovsky, you know, the character and Baryshnikov. Like, I did know that about the show, that they had him on. So I've always wanted to see it, maybe just for that, like, to see, like, what he's kind of like. Because he's a fascinating, just his life is fascinating. And I saw this one episode a couple days ago with you guys or something. I was actually really impressed by him.
As an actor?
Yeah, as an actor.
Or like, leaping over trash.
On the screen.
Jumping over trash.
Jumping
to
over
get
trash.
His, I mean, to get her banana back.
I can't tell you how many times I do that a day. Just jump over trash.
What are some fascinating parts of his life? Like, he's Russian. I know he's Russian and he's like a legendary danseur, but I don't know anything besides that.
Well, I mean, he was with I forget what, you know, the National Ballet of Russia or whatever that is, was, you know, near perfect. I think the only other person that would like, that people might argue is on his level. I mean, and I've been out of the game for so long, there might be something else, but Nijinsky is up there. So he was huge. He defected, because he wanted to leave Russia and be a star elsewhere and not live in that, you know, regime or whatever we want to call it. And came to America and just blew up, was huge. Started doing a bunch of stuff with Gregory Hines. They have a big movie. And he just
called White Knights.
Just White Knights. Became just like kind of an icon, a living icon, which is incredible. And then he went on to staying with dance. I think I said this in the Patreon, but he started a company called the White Oak Project. And the White Oak Project is like a modern dance. It's definitely heavily ballet, but it's just, it like, you know, stripped away the restrictiveness of ballet. And that became huge. And I actually danced with a company in Florida for many years, the Demetrius Klein Dance Company, and they did a piece. They did an evening with him, and so I got to meet him.
And it really?
Yeah.
I have a question about Baryshnikov. I don't know a ton about male. What is the
dance,
term? Like male
dancer,
dancer.
I was under the
French twang on it.
I was under the impression that they generally had to have a certain height and stature to them, because if the ballerinas were up on their points, they still wanted the men to tower over the females who were on their points. And he is a relatively short. He's a relatively short person, so he it was like a bit of an uphill climb due to the lack of.
I imagine. I don't really know much about that part of, like, but yeah, I mean, I think he was just so impressive as even a solo artist. Like, you know, he's going to be principal dancer, you know, male dancer. He's going to do all that. Like, he could just jump. He could go so high and stay in the air for so long. Excuse me. And he was just impressive. Just the way he had all of the skills.
Is there something, I mean, I'm just trying to figure this out, but is there something with, like, there are certain people that go through something that is as restrictive and rule-based and technique-based as, like, ballet, and a lot of people, or classical music could be a thing, like, anything that is, like, very classical and rigid, and then occasionally there's a person that is, like, they don't produce a lot of people. They produce a lot of people that do that. And then sometimes there's just a personality. And I'm also thinking of, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger as well, that it's like, there's a lot of bodybuilders, but then there's someone with that zhuzh that people are like, holy shit. And they become massive. Baryshnikov seems similar to Arnold Schwarzenegger in that way of, like, they did this thing where there's tons of people every year that do it, but it's not like then it produces.
Yeah, and I don't know what his, like him. I don't know what his upbringing was, like if he was like rich or poor in Russia, what that did for him, like his skill, did it bring him out of like the ghetto type of thing? What did it, you know, but he has successfully made an incredible career, you know, which I think for someone like him, you can't just be, you know, and you would say the same for Arnold. You can't just be only good at your thing. Mm-hmm. You have to be good at that thing, but then you have to have some sort of business acumen. You have to have a personality. You have to understand how the game works so that you can, you know, maneuver it to work in your favor. And you got to take an incredible amount of risks in life that I think both of those people did.
How many pirouettes is impressive?
At this point, one.
You mean me? How many pirouettes could you do? There's a video in White Knights, the Gregory Hines Baryshnikov movie, where he does 11. How many could you do at your peak?
At my peak, I was pulling off a triple.
Okay.
And I think a triple, if you can get a dancer to do a triple, you are super excited.
Yeah.
Like if you ever, and I don't like, I bet you if you would go ask the people that I dance with, they'd be like, yeah, he couldn't do a triple. Like like in rehearsal, maybe, like when he's like relaxed and good, but no one did that, put that on me. I also wasn't like a strong ballet, like typical ballet dancer. I got a lot of work because I was big and strong, and so I could partner well.
It's a
tank engine. That's you know, like you get a person that I need to like throw around and you know, make them look great. That's what I do. And that's what I've been doing in each of your lives.
You've been throwing us around.
We'll put up a great picture of you throwing Kevin after a particular backgammon loss on our Instagram account. That'll be a treat for everyone to see. Manhandling Kevin. But we're watching season 6, episode 13. This is the final season. It's the second half of the final season. And the episode is called Let There Be Light.
I have something to talk about before we do that real quick.
Yeah.
We talked about the Jen Kirkman thing, and I think a huge part of who Harlan is to us that we're skipping over, from what I can tell, I just read the episode that we watched with him, and which with Jen, and Harlan was there when we were in LA, and it was the episode called Cover Girl. And Kevin was saying, oh, I think it has like there's a dancing thing to it, something we didn't connect a dancing thing to Harlan. That episode was the one with Big Bone Tom that ate all the donuts, because Harlan is the donut man.
That's
what it was. It had nothing to do with dancing.
Donut
Big
man.
Bone Harlan.
Well, you're exactly right. I did do a lot of dancing, and then I left that life for a life of donuts.
For glazed donuts. From dancing to donuts, dude. That is your biography sure.
The Harlan Alford story. But that is Harlan's nickname, a loving nickname amongst all of us. The Donut Man.
Donut Man.
Comedy bit that is in comedy special.
That's a fun one.
We're
having fun.
I think we talked to Jen about that, and she was like, why are you the donut man? Like, oh, there's a lot of late nights at 7th Avenue Donuts and Diner in Brooklyn.
Shout out.
Harlan went to this diner so many times that just everyone, the staff, every single person knew him as the donut man. And there's also another time that he went in and they were like talking about how so thankful, and you were pretty drunk, I think, and like a few nights before you had tipped him like $100, which is great.
I'm like maybe $6 to $10. I don't know. Something wasn't right.
You're a generous guy.
You're a generous man.
Yeah.
You are a generous man. Let's watch this episode. We'll be back. I'm excited to talk about Let There Be Light with the one and only Harlan J. Alford. Legend.
All right.
Episode 87, Let There Be Light. Carrie begins to feel attached to Alexander, but cannot ignore his womanizing past. Together again, Steve moves into Miranda's apartment and finds it hard to avoid her angry ex-boyfriend, Robert. Charlotte tries to forget her miscarriage by volunteering, and Samantha accompanies Smith to an industry party hosted by Richard Wright. And now, back to the Bulls.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast, called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
I'm making keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
And we're back.
Welcome back, friends.
There will be pods.
Let there be light. Speaking of light, Harlan, you have one of those ring lights. You're getting a nice little glow going on.
You really
on.
Are.
Oh, yeah.
For your first full episode with us, you look better than we have in 120 episodes.
Do you want this?
What do you have?
How much is that thing?
Like $17.
What do you have it for?
I have it because when I work, I'm backlit.
Yeah.
That's what I've been finding out. And so I'm like really dark for all of my like phone calls and stuff that I just like.
I'll say this about Harlan. Harlan is the type of person that I think is like a sensible money spender, is the sort of thing that's like, yeah, it's $17. Now you also,
go ahead.
It's both sides of the same coin.
I 100% disagree, but keep going.
It's both sides of the same coin. One, it's not one or the other. He's a sensible money spender on products like that. And he's also, that is also paired with just like absolute insanity spending. So
his entire definition is just called impulsiveness.
No. He's not impulsive about that. There's something that it's like, I've said about things and he's just like, yeah, you can just buy that. And
that's
it's
called
like,
impulsiveness.
Yeah,
no, that's not.
Your
ring light
like
is not
me.
An impulsive buy.
We just told a story about me spending $100 just tipping someone for a donut.
I think that is different than buying a ring light, though. It's a
hey,
different thing.
You know what? We could sit and argue, Harlan, all night. We got Sex and the City to talk about.
Well, I think ring lights go right in line. That's a beauty. He cares about his beauty and
that's
how
true.
He looks on camera.
Let me tie it in this way. This was Let There Be Light.
Yeah.
And Let There Be there a go. Ring Light. I'm not sure what you want to do with
that's
it.
That's why I brought it up. But I'm going to do a quick recap of the episode. The through line was Let There Be Light. She references this thing that women become emotionally attached after they sleep with the women. She says there's a chemical that courses through their bodies that has them question things. Like, does he
after,
like me? Is he...
After sex?
That's what she says in the through line.
Yeah, it's called, that's semen. there's a substance that courses through their bodies after unprotected
sex. She said it was
sex.
It's a chemical. The question
the
she asks is, when it comes to men, even when we try to keep it light, how do we end up in the dark? So even when we're trying to keep it casual light, how do they end up in the dark? Samantha, of course, is with Smith, who she thinks is too young. And she goes to a party, 30 under 30, that Richard is hosting. And, oh, man, that was an emotional line. She, in a very ice cold manner, leaves Smith, goes up to a suite and hooks up with Richard. But then
that
comes
was brutal.
Back. And she says, you know, for the first time, she sees Smith in full light and he sees her. Carrie, of course, goes over to Petrovsky's house and hooks up with them, wakes up the next day, and he has a staff there. He makes her pancakes. And so she Googles him, right? The, a lot of Google going on in that episode.
And yeah, it's Google.com.
Google.com. She Google.com.
Google.com.
And she sees that he has a lot, he has a whole harem of women that he has been wandering around town with. So she gets a little insecure about that. Miranda, she bumps into Dr. Robert Leeds in the elevator, gives up custody of the elevator, and Steve has to go smoothen that relationship out. He notices pretty quickly that Dr. Robert Leeds has moved on and formed his own little IHOP in his house. He's doing fine with the ladies. I don't think Miranda meant as quite much to her as she thought he did. So Steve keeps her in the dark about that. And then lastly, Charlotte, I think the weakest storyline, she wants to work with the visually impaired. So she puts on a blindfold at Barney's and hilarity ensues. Where do you guys want to start? What do you want to talk about first?
I don't know what storyline we should talk about first, but this is one of the
interesting one.
What would you say?
What would that be?
Samantha?
Samantha's? Yeah.
Well, then is a good
and Carrie. I just because I'm super curious as to where that goes with Petrovsky.
Mm. Well, how about this? Let's bang out the Charlotte and Miranda storylines.
Okay,
quickly,
I think Charlotte's can be like a 30-second conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Charlotte's storyline was we need something because we just ended her biggest storyline. She's trying to get through it. Like, that's it.
Yeah. I think it was interesting. It showed, like, I couldn't think of a better analogy to show how shitty of a friend Carrie was than that, like 30 seconds in Barney's when she abandons her and then doesn't even look for her when she's wearing the blindfold, comes back and she's like looking at the on sale shoes.
She was very clear that she looked. Okay. She looked, she did a, she said, I looked. It was a quick glance around the mall.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But not once. I mean, I get the little, I don't know what it's called, the gimmick. She's wandering around blind. She's not. She could take the blindfold off at any second and correct herself.
So you think, you think Carrie was like, it's not a big deal. Like, she's going to take the blindfold off anyway. Why even waste my time with this?
Maybe.
If I were like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to go to a department store and I'm going to put a blindfold on because I want to experience life as a visually impaired person. All three of you, I think, would like at least entertain that and take it seriously and help walk me around. Like, I don't think any three of you, my friends, would just like take a phone call, like randomly leave me there and then not even try to find me.
No.
Here's the thing. Although, we're all close enough friends that you wouldn't walk away to take a phone call. I've had to sit through so many of your phone calls. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, when she's like, ooh, this is, I got to go take this. It's like, what? No, she's your best friend. Stand right there.
The service wasn't good.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, I think it's also like a weird TV thing that it's one of those things where it could have been solved also by Carrie being like, hang on, I got to take this. Just take off your blindfold real quick.
Yeah.
Like, there was a thing where Charlotte had literally just put it on. It was like, oop, got a phone call. It's like one of those things in a movie where you're like, if they just had a cell phone, this entire plot would fall apart.
Yeah.
It was totally one of those things where Charlotte could have just pulled the blindfold up.
That's true.
I mean,
but
Charlotte's very committed to, you know, seeing what it's like to be a person with the blind person.
Have you ever had someone blindfold you and lead you around a city or anything like that? It is insane. Like, it's very intense.
Yeah, it's wild.
All right. Go ahead, Harlan.
Youth group. You had to like spin your head around on the bat and then try to go walk 10 yards or something. I don't know.
All right. What were you going to say?
Somebody said this is the storyline for Charlotte ended last week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know you're at the end of the show, kind of. Do you think she's going to have any more story, or is this like it for her? She's just going to kind of coast.
She's going to get pregnant
again.
She's going to get pregnant or adopt a child. That's what my guess is.
I think there's going to be a scene where she meets Trey again, and Harry's going to be sitting there and she's going to say, you go play with your friends, I'm gonna go play with mine, and she's just gonna go hook up with Trey and a cardboard baby, and Harry's and just gonna be, his keister's gonna be flapping gonna be in the wind.
Yeah, but that actor's like, I'm gonna go on to do Californication, it's gonna be fine.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine with Charlotte's, in my opinion. I feel like this is just a reload.
It's not much.
Miranda and Steve, slightly more interesting because I think one of the most interesting things she said is like, you know, in the beginning, it's like great when you see someone in your building. You're like, oh my gosh, handsome person. And then this is the other end of that. That's like, this is why you don't shit where you eat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where I would love to know, does anyone know where that expression came from?
I think it came from a guy who took a shit in his own food.
Well, I think it started in New York in those really small apartments where the bathroom and the kitchen are one place.
Really?
No, I think it actually came from
a tenement building.
It's a camping thing. It's like you have to crap downstream from where you're camping so you don't pollute your own water source. That's what it's from.
That makes sense.
Or it's like not just camping, but like, you know, settling in wilderness kind of thing.
That goes for murder as well. Like when you bury the bodies, you want to put them
downstream.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I guess just with that, I would say that it is a universal truth that that I think everybody has had the good experience. That's the difficult thing, because that's where most love stories are too. That it's like, I saw that. Like, we took a risk. We did this. Like, it's...
I mean, Katie and I literally met at work.
You had a policy that you
yeah,
broke.
You broke a rule that you made.
That is not true.
Yeah, it was the rules. Yeah. I definitely think, had it not worked out, it would have been extremely awkward and uncomfortable, because we would have seen each other every Thursday for 3 hours. But... I don't know. It felt worth it. And I think in our case, it obviously worked out. Harlan got a dance at her wedding.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, exactly.
I've also been awkward. I've had to be in awkward situations like for 3 hours a week. It's okay.
Yeah. It's like, just 3 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how often is Miranda really going to see Robert? Like,
I mean, probably like, I'm trying to think, like, I have dated someone who lived in close proximity to me, and you run into granted, it wasn't in my building, but it was very close to my building. And you run into those people less than you think. It's in the back of your head for a while, right. But then it's like, well, are you okay with doing that? I mean, you have to think about that before you do it in the first place.
I think it would have been a lot different too had Miranda and Robert just like broken up. Like, yes, had they just been like, you know, we're not compatible. But the fact that she broke up and immediately got back with her baby's father, like, that I could understand why Robert was...
She cheated on him, right?
They did kiss in the closet while they were dating. Yes.
Yeah. That could be totally.
But I can under what I'm saying is I can understand Robert's frustration. Like,
so yeah. do we like Steve?
We love Steve.
Are you kidding me?
We like him. I don't know.
Do you like? Yeah, you saw this episode.
This is my first time on the pod, guys.
You saw this episode. Do you like Steve?
I like Steve.
He's got boxes with his name on it. He's got a TV that he bumped and broke. He had a baseball bat. He was moving into Miranda's.
You give me between, you know, the doctor and Steve, I'm probably going to go with the doctor. I mean, that dude is gorgeous.
Yeah, of course. But it's Steve. Mean,
literally.
He's a doctor. And then there's Steve.
There was this theme running through it from Miranda's angle that was like, kind of like, the beautiful story of when you fall in love with someone who's not as attractive or good as, like, it was like, she's like, you know, sometimes the universe just reminds you that you should be with the uglier, less cool person. Like,
that's what the light revealed to her.
Even it was like, it's kind of intense. Like, I don't know if they bring it up later, but don't tell me that 20 years into a marriage that there are not, that could not be a very real insecurity that follows one ball Steve that is just like, oh yeah, you had this attractive, like, doctor boyfriend that fucked you better than me. Like, she said that, like,
never been so deep.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that scene. I want to talk about the Miranda Robert scene in the stairwell where, like, it was obviously played for like weirdness, But I think like in the current climate, when we've talked at, you know, we've seen so much stuff about like, about, I don't, it wasn't like a Me Too thing, but they're like Robert, like, and he's like hurt and he's angry, but he like flipped the switch on like being a jerk pretty hard for a second when he like did the like, oh, Robert, yeah, no one's ever, it was kind of like, all right, Robert, come on.
I mean, I think he was acting, he was acting like a wounded animal. Like he was, he was obviously not acting emotionally intelligent, but I also, if you look at the circumstances, I don't blame him for acting like that. He could have maybe like done like two or three less ooh and ahs.
Dude, everybody is at their worst after a breakup, even if it doesn't go to the other person. Like even talking to someone.
This isn't a breakup. That they cheated.
It is a breakup.
It is also a breakup.
You can cheat after, you can cheat and then break
up. There's, I think that's where his big hurt is. If she would have come to him and been like, hey, I mean, unless maybe they didn't, they just made out and then they broke up amicably after that.
It just said like a few weeks later they broke up and, or like Steve and Miranda were back together.
He knows about something. I mean, he wouldn't act out this way if he didn't know that she kind of, that she made out with some other dude behind his back.
I think it's insinuating what we saw in the show was that her and Steve kissed in the laundry room, and then it said a couple weeks later they broke up with their significant other. So my guess is that she told Robert she was getting back together with Steve.
Yeah.
I think the point of that, of showing, I think he was so calm, so cool, collected the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
You saw that person lose their cool. Mm-hmm. But even if, even after a breakup, if you don't ever interact with your ex, even your friends are around, you know, like you get like a grace period. And then at a certain point, people are like, you know, and usually people are nice to be like, they're allowed to be a little mean. They're allowed to be like, fuck that person.
I don't know, but man. After you broke off your engagement, that's like when you were your best. We were going out and having a good time, partying, staying up till five. Like,
yeah, but I the first time I talked about my engagement on stage,
people were going out.
There were multiple times. Yeah, you were going out, but no,
yeah, John, you weren't even out of a relationship. Y'all were going out.
The first time I talked about it on stage, though, you could tell people's eyes were like, he is still hurt. Like it was not, you know what I mean? Like it was just like fucked out. Like people can sense that. And it, you know, if you do that after years and years, then people would be like, chill out. I feel like he's within the grace period of being able to be a jerk.
Yeah.
Not a jerk, but you know, if you broke the TV, that's just illegal. That's an unacceptable behavior.
Really thought they were going to go somewhere else with that. I don't know.
Dude, you know who broke the TV is the lady that lives in the building. She's pissed that she can't get in on any more Robert and Miranda action.
Are you talking about the lady from the mailroom lady. Yeah.
Yeah. She's pissed. Let's talk about, I want to save Samantha's for the last, because I think that was like the most emotional, at least the most intense. I mean, Katie had tears in her eyes. So let's talk about Petrovsky and Carrie International House of Pancakes.
The first thing I would say,
Petrovsky, sorry.
Here's the first thing I would say, and this is based on, we put up the Self-Helpless episode today, and there was a number of people that on our Instagram were like, he is not a creep. He's been clear about what he wants from the beginning, which is he wants, like, he pursues her and he says what he wants. And I think that is one of those generational big things that, like, that when people, older generations are more attracted to big, some people are more creeped out, like that elevator scene, especially when older. But I do think there's some credence to that, which is like, you know, he's a big artist. He's saying this is what he wants, which is a sexual relationship. And also he's attracted to her. And this, the first episode, I feel like some of the edges were a little hard. This one, they were a little softened because it wasn't just a one night thing. There was something that this to me seemed like way more normal. The first one I was like, it's a little, not creepy, but just like, okay, well, you get it. You want to fuck her. This one seemed like he's pretty clear about what he wants, which is, and he does this a lot. So I don't know. I think I feel less honestly, creepy about Petrovsky.
But you only know what the tabloids say. I mean, just what Google.com says. he never once in the episode like was with anyone else. There was no like she didn't see him at a cafe talking to another woman in it or anything like that. That's just you know, he has been straightforward. Even the first I actually did see that episode the other day where he like did invite her home and she said no. And he was like a little frustrated by that, but I mean
I think it all comes asked, down to
and
like
and he said and he didn't like force anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he moved on.
Is that they got really hung up on the way he looked at her first in that gallery. And like that, like I think if that scene wasn't in there and he just like came up to her and smiled, like I think the vibe of Petrovsky from last week's episode would have been a lot different. Because I thought he was like I was down with Petrovsky this episode. I thought he was great. I don't know. Like was there I don't think he did anything to Carrie to make her respond and kind of get paranoid the way that she did. Do you guys?
All right, well, then let's talk specifically about what Carrie said, which we had a conversation just the other day with a woman, an older woman, who said that she does not have sex for a long time in relationships because she doesn't want the guy to stop to break it off. And that's similar to what Carrie's doing in this episode. So I guess what's Carrie's gambit? What do we feel about that? Is that true? Is that not?
You know, I kind of take back what I said because he was pretty creepy when he was asking her to reach into his pocket for the dark chocolate.
Yeah.
What was that all about? That was a little weird. He does have some weird edges to him now that I think about it.
He's got some weird edges, but I think
he's Russian.
I was just going to say his weird Russians are all creepy. That he's just like he's got some like weird Russian artist things where you're like, I don't totally understand
to the country of Russia. I mean this in the kindest way. Everyone in your country is creepy, okay? You guys always have bags full of chocolate and you're always making banana jokes. Every Russian person always like, is that the banana in your pants? It's like, we get it, Putin.
And then you just give someone clogs when they come to your door?
Yeah.
What's happening here?
This is universally true. This is true, which is if someone's attracted to you, something like everything is the exact same. Everything that is romantic and pursuing and is also completely creepy. It all depends on the audience. You know what I mean? Like if someone is attracted to you, then all these things that are creepy are like charming and beautiful. And if they're not, then it's like it's just creepy stuff.
Yeah.
So like, okay, let's break that down real quick. Like bringing someone flowers.
Yes, creepy if a person's not into you.
Yeah, just giving them something that's going to die in a couple of days.
Not if they're good flowers.
Yes, I do think that
is
either
flower food. Costco flowers are really great, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been getting them for the summer. They've lasted for quite some time.
Let's do a bunch of these. Let's do five or six of these.
Okay.
Getting someone flowers is either very romantic or a complete misjudge. That's like.
I disagree.
What about date three?
I don't think giving someone flowers is ever a bad idea.
Yeah. Like I would like.
I think even if they go, ooh, I wasn't sure about this.
If like someone came to me and was like,
this isn't a thing.
I'm not sure if this person's into me. I'm going to buy them flowers. My initial reaction would not be, no, don't. That's going to creep them out.
I do think it's
you're fucking insane if you think that's true. I would not want to open this forum to women.
Give a bad.
You think that you don't. You would never give someone.
What can you do that's not creepy? Is that your argument?
Yes, my argument is that anything that you do that is pursuant of someone. That's why socially awkward people.
Why play your game and list off five things if every single one of them is going to be creepy?
My point is that everything is creepy unless it's the perceiver to decide.
Well,
and if you put
a rose in your mouth and then make them get the rose out of your mouth, that's giving them flowers in a weird, creepy way. But if you just are going on a date and you bring them flowers, right? That's You're not creepy.
I'm also talking about people that misread who is into them. And sometimes, and if you're someone like Alexander Petrovsky, you know people are going to be into you because you're handsome and you're extremely wealthy. So you have more of a rope for people to let you further out, and you can take bigger risks because you're used to people being attractive. But anything that he has done so far that is done by someone who has less social status and maybe less looks is fucking creepy.
No, here's two examples of that in the same relationship, hypothetical examples that I think counter that. One, meet a girl online, never met. She agrees to go, or a guy and girl meet online. They agree to go on a date. Guy shows up with flowers. Girl is not into the guy at all. I don't think it's a miss move because it's like, hey, just trying to show up. Didn't show up with a ton of roses. Just showed up. It's like classy move. You know what? Maybe a little bit of an antique move. Maybe people don't really do that as much. I do not think it's creepy. I think it's taking a classy swing. Second thing would be first date. Go out, get a drink, whatever. Not sure about the vibe. Second date. And so you didn't do the flowers on the first date. First date's just regular. So then you go on the second date with the person, decide to show up with the flowers. And then someone's like, well, that was creepy. No, it wasn't, because you were like, oh, they agreed to a second date. Thought I would try to charm them. I don't think either one of those is creepy.
I agree with the chocolates, though. I'm rethinking that. Just creepy? Food in general could be creepy.
Well, right here, I have a scenario with Katie and I. Our second date, we were going to go walk the High Line. And like, so I was like, let's meet here. We'll walk the High Line. We bought coffees. And I bought like four of those mini Bailey's Irish creams to spike our coffees while we're walking High Line. Was that creepy?
Whoa. Did you tell her you were going to spike her coffees?
I mean, no, I was like, hey, I brought these. Do you want one? You know,
I thought you weren't trying to roofie her with Bailey's.
No.
Okay, because that would be a little creepy.
I mean, that's what the implication that you're saying, though, John, is that would be the... That would be the implication of whether it's
I don't think that's creepy, John.
But I brought them out.
Creepy, but it could be creepy.
I brought them out, and I was like, "Hey, I bought these. Do you want one for your coffee?"
No, that's not creepy because you're married.
How would that ever be creepy?
We weren't married at the time. It's not something that I believe. I'm not trying to be like, no, let's shut down the conversation. But my point is not something that I think you or any of us can refute. My thing is that. If you listen to women talk, and if you listen to women in their conversations talk, they are not talking about how slick and how great all the moves guys are. They're talking most of the time about how much guys misread things, or how much they wish they were further into this guy. But like, something is creepy, whether how it's perceived. And I think that lots and lots and lots of guys' moves, even if you're on a second date, could totally turn someone off. Because it's like, it's too intense. Now, I'm not saying that's right, but I think tons of girls have way more stories about guys being creepy than guys do about guys being creepy.
That's because the majority of guys are creeps.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Kevin. I just think the way that when you were saying anything you do could always be perceived as that. I think like when we were trying to find specific examples, I don't think that argument holds up there, but I see what you're saying, that like guys in the stereotypical male female dynamic, guys misread things, and we all know women in our lives who have definitely had like guys have do dumb, weird, creepy stuff, even if they weren't meaning to.
Yeah, that's also why it's difficult to take those risks because it's difficult. Like what is the risk of being like, I just won't do flowers. I'll just pick up the bill at the end and I won't do the flowers. It's nervous. It would be scary to show up with flowers, even if you're into a person, because the risk is like, if I do that, I show my cards that I'm really into you. And that
whose side are we on with flowers here? Whose side are you on, Kevin?
Bring flowers.
Do you take flowers or not?
If it's like the third date, get some flowers.
First date, flowers or no flowers?
No, I wouldn't do that. First date,
I wouldn't do flowers. I don't think
you're creepy if you do, but
I agree.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I don't think you are.
We need to talk about Samantha. I like this. I like this conversation.
Corey, one thing I would like to know about, sorry, last thing. One thing I would like to know, if you're a female listener right now, my question for you, if you've heard this discussion, is what do you think about a guy who takes the big swings? And if he's honestly into you, if there's a guy who's like, I wasn't sure if I should, but I really like you, so I just took the big swing. And sometimes, like, and that could be, yeah, construe that any way you want to, but do you agree with some guy that goes with his heart and takes the big swings? Because I think that we've seen those kind of guys on Sex and the City too.
I'd be very curious to hear about that. Let's talk about the storyline that Harlan said was the, what'd you say? The only interesting. The only interesting one. Samantha and Smith.
I should take that back. I do think the other one is interesting. No, I think this was the most interesting.
We're holding you to it. That comment was creepy. That comment was creepy. You're a creepy guy.
Look at your fucking shirt. Look at your colorful triangle creepy fucking shirt.
Hey, Harlan, that shirt, how many guys is creepy. With a shirt like that actually
Listen,
bought
the way
a
that you're
light?
Talking makes you creepy it's right creepy. Now.
I mean, if you think about it, Corey's bucket hat is also really creepy.
It's so creepy.
Kevin's
I look like a fisherman right now.
That's insane to me that it took that long for me to talk about other people being creepy for you to point out that I have a blonde fucking mustache. Like,
so do I.
And like, dude, if you look at Kevin's Sag Harbor hat with a fishbone on it, like,
yeah,
dude,
it's such a dad who flies kites on the beach.
Yeah, you are a creep.
And has a metal detector.
And I go and buy all my clothes, summer clothes in the fall because there's just great discounts. And I'll just wait the season and I'm ahead.
Yeah.
Oh man. But Samantha and Smith show up. Richard, for some reason, is bouncing his own party and lets Samantha in. And
who's that actor? I've seen him a lot.
Dude, you've seen him in Warriors.
He's a warrior.
Yes, he is Warriors. I've also seen him in, I'll think of it. You guys go ahead. I have to think about this.
But then he's talking to Samantha, picking a little bit on her insecurities about Smith being young. To be fair, they like really younged up Smith when those girls rang up and they're like, the pretzels are snorting out their nose. They got boogers. And he's like,
I know.
Cool.
It was like just a second draft on that scenario, please.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But still, like, just because your boyfriend goes off with some girls and because they have pretzels in their nose doesn't mean you should just go fuck your ex-boyfriend in front of your current boyfriend.
You're best 30 of 30. Our 30-year-olds putting pretzels in their noses. I will say this. I don't remember doing that at 30.
You can tell when the characters are being written by people that don't understand them. That's clearly what older gay men think that young straight men are doing. That's like exactly what happened. Michael Patrick King is like, this is how young straight people are. And it's like,
they got pretzels in their noses.
Yeah, just snorting pretzels up their nose.
Dude, I hope they crushed it up and just ran lines.
All right, just running pretzel lines, running pixie sticks.
Okay, so let's get into the actual scenario. Or wait, Corey, were you going to say something?
No. I'm good. I'm here for this.
I would say that this is a bit of a referendum. It's not going to continue, but I would say this small scene between her and Richard is like kind of a referendum on Samantha's entire outlook on sex.
Okay.
I agree with that. I mean, I think that we've seen a lot of like growth there, but then if you go with and I say growth in the way of like, I guess I mean like we've seen a lot of like different character development from like what she originally, what we saw at her first. But I think this sort of shows if you live by one way, then it's going to definitely have effects another way, you know? And you saw that with her and Smith.
So what is Samantha wanting? Like if you're going to look at the TV show, like I feel like everyone knows that Kristen Davis, because Charlotte wants to be married, right? And have a child. What is Samantha? I mean, you've been with her for 6 seasons now, and when they were doing the like spritz party with the cologne or the perfume, she was still making all these like, just go have sex. Like it doesn't matter. Like everything's fine. Like, you know what I mean? Like she still seems on one page that kind of character, and then what I liked about this scene, what I thought, like, wow, this has some real strong depth. She was genuinely hurt. And I thought that when they were closing in on her while she was getting fucked from behind, and then they were just going into, like, getting closer to her face, I thought that was really powerful. She was she was like very distraught and very frustrated with herself and hating what she did. And that broke my heart for her. Mm-hmm. And it made me wonder, like, what is she going to do? I mean, I guess all your listeners probably know all the outcomes because they've seen it all before, but I'm wondering, I mean, I don't know what happens. Like, is she going to find love? Is that what she wants? Or is she just going to be happy with who she is?
I think she wants freedom. I think her biggest thing is that she wants freedom. And I think she's bumping up against a thing whose name is Richard. No, I think she's bumping up against a thing that is, she's seeing, like, if you want true freedom, you're going to run into some hurt where you're, once you find attachment to something that's going to limit your freedom, then your quest to have true freedom is going to hurt a little bit because attachments involve emotions and other people. And, like, I think she's seen that she wants that freedom, but she's not immune to the feelings of attachment that she has for other people, like Smith, or maybe just her judging herself, being like, what the heck am I doing? I thought that would be great, and it wasn't great.
I think like there's like a sadness to it, but it's like it's a pretty dark thing to look at this person who treated you like shit, to look at this other person who's treated you kindly, and then go get fucked by that person that treated you like shit. Like, there is a sexual thing to this, but I don't think the show will go deeper into this, but I do think there's something to Samantha that is a character that is written that I don't know, like, that's pretty fucking dark. They don't ever connect the fact that she is always searching for, like, doesn't care at all about sex, and then in this moment uses sex in, like, the darkest way to betray the person that loves her and to seek validation from this person that treats her like shit. Like, it's a comedy, so you can't do that. And there was a darkness in the view of it, but it's like, that's like some fucked up. This is the most fucked up scene in the show.
Totally. I think the sadness in her.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think the sadness in her was seeing what she props up come crumbling down. Mm-hmm. Samantha is a person. It doesn't matter who, it's what. It doesn't matter, like, who you're with, as long as they fuck well, as long as you're getting the dick, as long as there's good sex, and like Smith. Richard, Jonesy, it doesn't matter as long as, like, the sex is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And when she gets that, and she's getting, like, what she props up, sex, I think she's realizing that there's a paradigm shift happening in her life, and sex isn't necessarily the top thing anymore. Mm-hmm. It's now Smith. And so it went from this act to this person. And that's why I think that line where they say, she sees him for the first time. She, like, really saw him more than just a fuck toy. She sees him as a real human. And that's, like, what was sad for her is, like, the lie that she had built her last 3 years on, the veneer is coming off.
Could it be that she, I can see that. Like, you're talking about what she looks it seemed like to me that she wanted something like a Petrovsky. She wanted an older gentleman, right? She wanted to be taken care of and thought that came with some sort of status, some sort of, like, age, some sort of wealth thing, maturity. And she kind of seemed to come around to that. Maybe she was being taken care of, but in a way she'd never seen before with this younger guy. Mm-hmm. How long has this Smith guy been in the picture?
Like a season, about. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. But she's always kept them a bit at a distance. I know that also, like, in lots of relationships, there is that time, like, you have to like have the big bump in the road to force you to confront, like, to change course. And I think that's what's happening with her too, that it's like something would have had to break for her to be able to put together her emotions, or else she could be like, I see you as young and hot and I'm older and this, and like, this is just that thing that they're going to have that conversation where they lay the cards on the table and he can walk away and be like, you betrayed me and you treated me like this in that moment. Or she can be like, I saw something and I want something better for this relationship. But I hope they have an honest conversation about that, because I do. We always want more from Samantha, and I feel like this is.
It's time to go deeper with Samantha. It's time to go Richard Leeds deep with Samantha.
We want to go deep.
Richard Leeds.
We want to go emotionally deeper than anyone's ever been inside Samantha.
That's
I'd like
also,
to.
And also with Kim Cattrall.
This episode, I think that storyline alone carried a lot of depth to it. That was one of the most, if not the most, emotionally charged moments in the show for me.
Also, you guys asked me this at the beginning and I didn't answer, but she's my favorite.
She's your favorite?
Samantha. Yeah.
Harlan, real quick, 5 second answer. Which one of the ladies are you?
Oh, how much time do you have?
Which shade do you want? I probably Samantha.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah.
I would say across the board.
Only because I would think about the others and I'd have to count them out. Like I don't really connect with them as much as I would connect with her.
I think you have Samantha's free spirited side. You're a free spirited boy, but at the same time, you are the best friend any loyal person friend, will be lucky to have. Like you are the most loyal person in the world.
Very true.
And also what you were saying earlier, John, like Harlan has not just like a desire to be like, I'm a free spirit, but also I think like a deep desire for freedom and to not have like oppressive rules on you, whether it's about like sex or like certain, but also with lots of things. Like I feel like there's a,
Harlan's the person you go to if you
shirts, your shirt has lots of different colors.
I will wear a cycling shirt to a podcast.
If you want to go to the no judgment zone, you go to Harlan Alford. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. Come drinking with me for a night. You'll
the last thing we do, Harlan, you've heard us do it in the office a million times. We do Cosmo rating, 1 to 5 Cosmos. Let's rate this episode.
I'll go first.
Okay.
Corey. Oh, wait, we want to get them? Everybody got theirs?
Yep.
Yep. Harlan, you want to join us in saying it at the same time?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Right. Sorry, I didn't know that.
3, 2, 1. 3.75. Whoa, who said 3.75?
I did.
Wow.
And Harlan, what'd you say?
6.
Defend it. You're the first person that's gone to 6.
Best episode I've ever seen of Sex and the City.
Third episode you've ever seen.
But the best one.
Amazing.
I'm really like, I've watched a lot of TV and I've been made fun of a lot for my TV watching by Kevin, by all of you. and so I've watched, maybe not you, Corey, you could.
I mean, you're currently watching Teenage Bounty Hunters, so I could understand how this would be a 6 compared to that.
I wasn't expecting the show to go that dark with Samantha and where they were at. And I really liked the lovey-doveyness of Petrovsky and Carrie. So like, it's all I would want in a show. The other two storylines, I liked the comedy of Miranda. The Charlotte line was awful, but, but yeah, so as far as Sex and the City goes, I'll drink 6 Cosmos tonight.
Perfect. That's fitting. That's a great fitting rating. I love that.
Yeah.
I would give it 3.75. I think the Charlotte line was just too non-existent for me to go like higher than a 4. I'd like seeing Steve. It was like some good Steve, some good Mario Cantone, but like yeah, I think Samantha definitely carried that episode, in my opinion. It was 3.75. I'd watch it again.
Yeah, I agree. 3.75. The Charlotte one, there was nothing there. But I will say, whatever actress like played the person at the agency that told Charlotte to do the blindfold thing, I couldn't tell what was going on. And then at the end, when she was just like, okay,
bye.
Goodbye. She's like, leave or whatever. Like, that actress was super funny.
Yeah. We do have to. She was tired of hearing about her.
Real quick, we don't have a ton of time, but Corey, did you notice Andy Cohen in that episode?
Oh, where? Yeah. That was the guy, the shoe.
The shoe salesman where Carrie was trying on shoes.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's Andy Cohen.
That's like, that's right. That's like the big famous Andy Cohen SJP thing. That's right. Totally. Yeah.
Kevin, yeah, White.
Sorry. Anyway, solid 375. Just there was a couple things that like didn't bring it into the force for me.
It's weird giving it a 375 for how much I liked it. Like I've scored other ones. It's like an imperfect but wonderful show. And I think that shows that's the strength of the Samantha storyline and also Petrovsky. Love him or hate him, starting a conversation, you know? Mm-hmm. Also, I guess I think the most interesting writing on this show and on any is when you're expecting it to be like, relationships are crazy. One time a guy did this. And I think that there's just so much truth in like, in people's relationship to sex and love and relationships. And this is where it was just really sticky. Someone who's on such solid ground, like Samantha, to be struggling, like, man, it was just insane. Like that acting and that storyline. And I don't know, props to them for going there and adding complexity to that character. Mm-hmm. And, it was awesome. And also Smith's acting, I thought in that scene, when he sees her, like that is so fucking good. Strong. Like
Smith's really, just earning points across the board. As a true bro.
And it's like, hey, he's not a boy. He's a man. Like,
yeah,
I got you. Yeah. It was pretty great. So
that line, just making sure you got home safe. Just,
woo. Yeah, I just got chills.
My question for you, Kevin, was that creepy?
Huh?
Was that creepy?
Yeah. It would be if JJ just came up by and he's like, I just want to make sure you go home safe. Wait, you're not even in this episode.
Hey Jonesy.
Hey Joe. Well, thank you so much for listening, Harlan. It was so nice chatting with you. We've been dying to have you on the pod, waiting for Petrovsky to peek his head out.
Man, so
I love it. I love that so much. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Hey, Harlan,
what a good fun night.
I don't know how many you can do in real life, but you can do 10 pirouettes in my heart, buddy.
Yeah. Harlan, we promise we put it out. Harlan and I are taking a road trip. He's joining Katie and I on like a fall road trip, and we're going to start a side project called Harlan and John Play Backgammon. We're going to record our backgammon games every single night and put them out in the podcast universe. And so if you want to hear two idiots playing backgammon and talking about who knows what.
If you want to hear all the stories about Kevin and Corey that they don't tell on this podcast, just listen to that one.
Yeah. Please do not tune in.
Harlan and John Play Backgammon coming soon.
Please don't like and subscribe if that's true.
And finally, I want to say thank you to Ann K. Chicago. She gave us 5 Cosmos on iTunes and said, good for your mental health. She said the podcast is good for our mental health. It's good. It's a pandemic self-care strategy that's very effective. And also DNC Fearson, another 5 Cosmo rating. If you haven't given us 5 Cosmos on iTunes, please do. And our Patreon has many episodes besides this, besides our main feed. It is $5 a month. And if you go there, please subscribe. We have way more episodes coming. And it means the more Patreons we have, the more cool shit we can do in the future. That's right. 100%. And so please go subscribe to our Patreon and give us a good review on iTunes.
Leaving a review. That could be creepy or awesome.
Here's the thing. We'll take either one. Either one. And also follow us on Spotify because we love you there too.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Thanks,
Harlan.
Later, taters.
See you guys.
Bye.
Love you.
The Bradshaw Boys stars Corey Cabin, Kevin James Doyle, and John Sieber. The show is produced by me, Jeremy Balin, and narrated by Katie Sieber. This podcast is part of the Seltzer Kings Network. Check out all their great podcasts at seltzerkings.com. You can find the boys on their socials at The Bradshaw Boys or on their website at thebradshawboys.com. And as always, if you see them in the street, tip your glass. Thanks for listening.